Yes, I did come from Vermont, but yesterday I was in very warm, sunny Saigon, so it's hard. I'm having a little hard time adjusting, even though I am a native Vermonter. But I have no relationships to disclose. I wish I had more money as a nonprofit, but I don't. So this is the map that Ernie showed you earlier, again, but also to a reminder that spraying did take place in Laos as well, to a lesser extent, and I just recently finished a survey of where there may be potential hotspots in Laos, and there's not a lot of information because it was a CIA-led war, but a few of the there was some storage, we believe, of dioxin in a few bases, of Agent Orange, I should say, in a few of the bases that were the U.S. was at in Laos. But the main problem when we're talking about Agent Orange, we think about the problem in Vietnam. Ernie mentioned a little bit also the other in the last panel about the hotspots. A Canadian group called Hatfield Consultants did some research starting in the late 90s and early 2000s about where dioxin may still be a problem today due to spraying. And they found, thankfully, that where there was aerial spraying done in Vietnam, there are not significant levels of dioxin in the soils and sediments of sprayed areas. But, as Ernie mentioned, where the barrels of herbicides, and we're talking millions and millions of 55-gallon barrels of herbicides were stored, there are significant hotspots today. The Binh Hoa Air Base is the largest, and the recent estimate right now is if you were to clean that up, it would cost about $200 million. But the Da Nang Base, when that was first started a few years ago, the estimate there was $34 million, and now they've increased that to $84 million. As they began to excavate the soil and find that there was a lot more soil contamination. But also the problem in Da Nang and also in Binh Hoa is arsenic is being found in the soil as well. So that's something else that has to be addressed, not just the TCDD and dioxin of the Agent Orange. The Phu Cát base, right now the Vietnamese government, the Ministry of Defense actually in Vietnam, gathered up the contaminated soil at that spot. It was a relatively small amount of soil compared to Binh Hoa or Da Nang, and that has been put into a contained landfill for the hundreds of years, thousands of years, or whatever they determined to do with the soil. But that has been contained and taken off the list of dioxin hotspots in Vietnam by the Vietnamese government, though it just means the soil is contained. I think I skipped a... Oh, I lost a slide somewhere, or maybe it went. Yeah, I did. I lost a slide. What this doesn't include are some of the other possible 24 hotspots that Hatfield found elevated levels to some extent. That's the air bases like Pleiku and Alui Valley in central Vietnam, where there are, when we say elevated levels, that's more than what would be normally found in, you know, the 10 parts per trillion or whatever you would find in, you know, background. These bases have within the hundreds parts per trillion and to some levels maybe up into the thousands parts per trillion. But the problem is a lot of investigation has not been done there, partly because some of the bases are still active military bases, so the Vietnamese are not letting people just run around and testing. And others, they just didn't have the money to do more testing. So there's probably 24 bases in southern Vietnam that need to have further investigation done. This is just a brief look at what money has gone into addressing the problem in Vietnam of Agent Orange and the dioxin contamination. Most of the money to date has come from the U.S. government. This is after years and years and years of organizations like myself and Vets for Peace and others of pushing to get the U.S. government to pay attention to this issue. The U.S. has committed to cleaning up the Da Nang Air Base. They've committed to cleaning up the Binh Hoa Air Base in principle, but when it comes down to dollars coming out of Congress, that's another story. But at this point, they have fully funded, in theory, the cleanup of the Da Nang base if that stays at that $84 million. When it comes to services to people with disabilities in Vietnam, when those and any of the public potential public health threats of dioxin, you see that that's much less. And again, it's been more foundations and UN and nonprofits contributing to that than to the U.S. government. The U.S. government has committed $16.7 million at this point for what they call, when you read the bills that come out of Congress, the appropriation bills, it's related health activities. The U.S. government addresses disabilities in Vietnam regardless of cause. That's their language. They don't say this is for disabilities in Vietnam due to Agent Orange, but regardless of cause. And when you talk about related health activities, it's money targeted for health activities around Da Nang, Binh Hoa, Phuket base. So, I mean, they sort of target it to these geographical areas, but it's not specifically for Agent Orange. Money increased over the years, starting with the first appropriation, thanks to Senator Leahy, my senator, who I think many of us who work on war legacy issues, whether it's UXO or Agent Orange or other war legacies, we would not be where we are with money out of Congress if it wasn't for Senator Leahy, who has pushed for these issues to be addressed. Started off very small, and it gradually has increased to now in the most recent spending bill that never got passed. It was $20 million for cleanup and $5 million for related health activities was what the U.S. Congress Senate Appropriations Committee determined should be given, though, of course, we're dealing with continuing resolutions year after year after year, so the average has been about $15 million for cleanup and three or five for related health activities. But what has stopped is the non-U.S. government sources. Foundations are not addressing this issue in Vietnam. Ford Foundation was for several years, then Ford Foundation pulled out of Vietnam, so that money has ended. Atlantic Philanthropies contributed, which has done a lot for funding public health in Vietnam and primary health, building primary health clinics, have not touched this issue whatsoever in Vietnam, other than they did provide, I think it was $1 million for the dioxin, what we call the dioxin laboratory that was built in Vietnam, which is was intended to help Vietnam develop to better do testing of organic persistent organic pollutants. So there's been some money that's gone to that, but their foundations are really not spending a lot of money on this issue. Some small non-government organizations like myself, mine, are doing some direct funding to help people we believe are affected, but we're talking small money. So the major money right now has been the U.S. government. As we mentioned, the cleanup of the Da Nang Air Base, this is from about 2 months ago. Here they're spraying the soil to try to keep the dioxin down, I guess, once they excavate. But I was just there 2 days ago, whenever I was at the Da Nang Air Base, and when you fly out of the Da Nang base, you can see where this containment, this in-pile thermal desorption facility is. You can see that from your airplane when you taxi and turn around to take off. It's quite large concrete structure that they have removed the soil to and put it into this containment structure. And they have they put in the heaters to heat the soil with. And they're in the process now of the first half of the contaminated soil being thermally treated to break down the soil dioxin. We don't know the success of that yet, but that's very much in the process right now. One of the reasons the price went up from $35 to $84 million was that there was more soil contamination. The other thing was arsenic was found, and arsenic doesn't do well with this in-pile thermal desorption. I'm not the expert on it, but I've been told you wouldn't necessarily use that to get rid of the arsenic that's in the soil. So who knows what further treatment may have to be done to deal with other chemicals That's another big question mark. That's the slide I was looking for. I must have reversed them. But this is a little map of where some of the other potential sites are. This is on my website, I believe, but in case you want to go into more detail on it. So there's maybe a two dozen other sites that we need further investigation on. When we think about Agent Orange in Vietnam, you tend to think of what the health impacts are, and I won't go into this because we have the expert here, but just that the Vietnamese follow the IOM list as well, though they also consider birth defects in the offspring of exposed people, unusual births, miscarriage, unusual reproductive outcomes as being associated with Agent Orange, where we don't hear necessarily, and some mental disorders. They'll also add into that that pile. Things like epilepsy they would add as an Agent Orange related, which we wouldn't. If you're a male veteran, spinal bifida is the one birth defect that would be considered as potentially related to your exposure in Vietnam. When it comes to female veterans, of which there's only about 8,000, you have a little bit more, a longer list of potential birth defects, but not related to Agent Orange, but related to service in Vietnam. So this is a partial list. It is the list that you find on the VA site. But basically, it's if you don't have a family history of this condition or there's not a known cause, you could potentially receive benefits from the VA for your child's birth defect. I don't honestly know how many are getting, maybe you know, but it's not a lot of people who are receiving any benefits. But what it shows is, if you're female, there's a lot longer list. And, of course, who was exposed in Vietnam? But a lot of females. So it's hard to know exactly what Agent Orange and dioxin did to the Vietnamese population health and the birth defect outcomes. In my own work, personally, I don't even argue about it. I just, if I find a family that has a family member with a severe disability, I'm going to help that family member, whether it was Agent Orange or some other condition, practically on the ground, that's what you do. But when it comes to Vietnam, the Vietnamese, since the mid-2000s, when the Vietnamese filed a lawsuit against the chemical companies to try to get support for the for the people affected by Agent Orange in Vietnam, the use of Agent Orange in Vietnam, and the dioxin contamination, there's been a lot of awareness raised in Vietnam about Agent Orange and its potential health effects. And, of course, it's the children with birth defects that become the poster children of this issue. The Vietnamese do not believe that every single person born with a disability or birth defect is caused by Agent Orange. In fact, if you look at the Vietnam Red Cross and the Vietnam Association for Victims of Agent Orange, who are working with this population believed to be affected by Agent Orange, they would say about maybe 25% of the children born with a disability or have a birth defect, they believe is caused by Agent Orange. There's 75% of the other ones are some other cause. But the U.S. government has accused the Vietnamese of saying every single child born with a disability is because of Agent Orange, and that's not true at all. We don't have very good numbers, actually, of how many children have disabilities in Vietnam or born with birth defects. There is no systematic registry. There wasn't during the war, and there isn't now either. Many children are born in rural health clinics. They're born at home. We just don't have the data to begin with. But in the last census that was done in 2009, the census takers did have the question of disabilities in their form for children 5 and above, because some of these things that you would ask, you wouldn't be able to ask a 3-year-old, what cognition they have. So those questions wouldn't work. But they looked at hearing, seeing, movement, and cognition, and how well can, you know, a range of how well you can perform these functions, and found that in that population of 5 to 18, about 4.7% of the population in Vietnam in that age group have some level of inability or difficulty in dealing with the seeing, hearing, movement, or cognition. So that's really the nationwide, the only data we have, but it's not very, it's very specific in the sense that it's self-reporting. I mean, you really don't have, aren't doctors determining whether they can hear, see, or move. It's self-reporting of these. So we don't have a lot of good data, basically. But what I find in my work is, I mean, children, you know, like in any place, you tend to be broken down into three main categories: those who have physical, visual, or auditory disabilities of some kind, but they don't have any, it doesn't have any impact on their cognitive ability. Some of these children, the Vietnamese would consider to be a victim of Agent Orange, but a lot of them they would not necessarily. This young girl here, Hoai Thung, she's shown here with a prosthetic arm that we actually helped get, but she was also born without legs. And she is considered, because of her severe malformations of her arms and legs, to be considered a child affected by Agent Orange and happens to live in a heavily sprayed area. But for this population, there are a lot of which I think we'll hear a bit more about CBR and other activities. With prosthetics, devices, hearing aids, glasses, physical therapy, inclusive education, this population in Vietnam is now finally starting to do a bit better than they were a few years ago as services are starting to come in, though not in all the taste, and parents really have to be very proactive to get these services that they need for their children. These are the hopeful cases. Then there are children with intellectual or developmental disabilities who have no physical disabilities. The Vietnamese, in some cases, will put Down syndrome into the list of someone affected by Agent Orange, but not all Vietnamese will do that. It varies from place to place. Autism is another area that some may or may not put into the being a Agent Orange-related condition. And for this population, if you're living in a major town or city, or primarily one of the major cities, you might be able to find the services you need, maybe, if you're lucky. This happens to be a school run by the Catholic Church that serves about 100 children, and there's maybe another dozen or so facilities like this in Ho Chi Minh City, of a population of 8 million people. So one of the huge needs in Vietnam are occupational therapy, speech pathology. I've been told there's only a handful, two or three speech pathologists in the whole country of Vietnam. So when you're dealing with a population of who have particular needs, Vietnam just does not have the specialized care for the most part. The people I work with the most and the hardest cases and the heartbreaking cases are those who have both severe physical and intellectual disabilities. They're the ones, children who are bedridden, unable to feed themselves, bathe themselves, sit up, mothers who have to literally chew the food before they feed it to their children because the children cannot digest it or swallow themselves. These are the population I work with the most, and this is the population that the majority of people in Vietnam will believe are affected by Agent Orange, particularly because you find higher incidences of severely multiple disabled children and young adults. When I say children, I'm also talking about 30, 40-year-old children, not just, you know, these two boys are in their 20s. This is the particular population that you think about most often when you think about someone who is affected by Agent Orange. And honestly, for a lot of these families, there is not a lot that can be done right now. 80% live in rural parts of the country. There are absolutely no services. Even if you have to get your child to a medical facility, this particular family lives 2 kilometers from a medical center. over a dirt road, over a couple streams. Difficult for one person with able body to get on a motorbike to get to this clinic. Even more difficult if you're carrying your severely disabled child that has a lot of movement. So CBR, which I won't go into because we're going to hear about that later, and training the parents in how to better care for their children who are in these severe conditions is a huge need in Vietnam. 3 minutes. So getting the medical care, most, as I said, 80% live in these rural areas, so getting the medical care to them is vital. They cannot get to the health clinics, and they have a lot of other secondary conditions, lung infections and so forth, infections from bed sores and a whole range of things that that have to deal with. This young woman here has severe jaundice and a liver condition, and she just can't get the painkiller she needs for her severe condition. Vietnam needs a system of referrals. So many families I work with will say, I took them, my child, to the doctors, and they said, sorry, there's nothing we can do. It's not that there's nothing that can be done, it's just there's nothing that we can do. And parents don't know where to go to next. Or they jump on a bus and spend a lot of money to go to Ho Chi Minh City, where they're trying to figure out how do you get around to the medical system in a completely foreign to them situation. Training a medical staff for early identification of disabilities, development delays, birth defects, that's vitally needed. Training of specialists and PT, OT, speech pathologists, and so forth, huge need. Respite care for caregivers. These parents, often single parents, single mothers usually, because the father in many cases has left the family or has died of his own condition. 24/7, 365, that mother is there. She can't work because she's home with that child, and it is a huge need. There are some organizations. Working Children of Vietnam has probably the best, I think. It's a case management system. They're working in Da Nang that takes the whole needs of the family. They work directly with the People's Committee. U.S. has provided two grants to deal with the health-related. The first one was $3 million to save the children, VNH, East Meets West. There was a lot of problems with how that particular grant money was used. I won't get into that, and I don't have time. But the recommendations of that was they want one primary grantee the next time they granted money in Vietnam. And they wanted to develop this holistic rehabilitation system, which is similar to what Children of Vietnam did, a case management system. And so that's what they've done. They gave $9 million to DAI, which is a for-profit USAID administrating organization in D.C. that has partnered with the Vietnam Assistance to the Handicapped to grant they gave $9 million over 3 years, and it was impossible, really difficult to find out what they were doing, and I had a meeting with the head of this DAI program in Vietnam the other day. It was still hard to get out of them what the heck they were doing, because USAID wants to control all the publication of what's happening. Very sensitive. The USAID does not want dealing with the health impacts of Agent Orange in Vietnam is something that they have been fighting tooth and nail. They didn't want to deal with actually any of this issue, but Leahy forced it on them. But when it comes to the human health side, they really are difficult to get them to figure out what they're doing, including the CDC grant, that CDC birth defects registry Arnie was mentioning earlier. It's just possible to find information. But one of the things I was told that they have to provide services for 10,000 people with disabilities with this money. And how do you do that? Lots of wheelchairs, lots of hearing aids, lots of glasses. You quickly can reach that 10,000, but it's not addressing the severe multiple disabled people who live in the rural parts of Vietnam. One positive thing, maybe if you're a nonprofit or a health organization or want to develop CBR in Vietnam, they are going to announce within the next couple days the small grants program where $10,000 to $25,000 will be available for nonprofits and others to apply for this grant to expand services to people with disabilities in Vietnam outside of Da Nang. Right now, most of the programs are right in Da Nang, which is heavily already, a lot of resources there, a lot of funding there, so they're spending all their money in an area that's over-serviced, in my opinion. But now they're possibly there's some money available. We'll know when that RFP comes out later this week of what can be done. One last thing, what DAI and the U.S. government is doing with, and it's not yet answering the question that this woman had of me and many of people in Vietnam have of me, which is, what am I going to do? Who's going to care for my child when I die? And that, I get that question all the time. I don't have the answer, and it breaks my heart that I don't have that answer. Because once she dies, who's going to care for her child if there's no one in her family who will take on that task? And that's what drives me every day, is to try to answer that question. Thank you.